Twitter has a conversation problem, and it's hired social scientists to help figure it out. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, Demystifying the Digital Economy. I'm Molly Wood. Earlier this week, it emerged that Disney considered buying Twitter in 2017, but CEO Bob Iger said it was too toxic for the family-friendly brand. Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey often says that Twitter needs to think more about how to deal with harassment and hate speech on the platform. So with that in mind, the company has commissioned a 2-year study to help it create metrics for what is a healthy conversation and what isn't. Rebecca Trumbull teaches media and politics at George Washington University. She's one of the research leads on this project. She said her team is looking at 4 categories: mutual engagement, diversity of perspective, incivility, and intolerance. And so far, the findings aren't always what you would expect.
Increased engagement with diversity of perspectives for some people can lead them to essentially get fired up about the particular views that they already hold. So it might actually entrench their views more deeply to be exposed to a broader range of perspectives, and particularly those with which they disagree. That may be good in the sense that it actually mobilizes people to participate in the political system, but it could be bad in the sense that it actually increases polarization.
And then talk to me about how incivility and intolerance play into that, because it sounds like it's probably more complicated than we think.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And here, my colleague Patricia Rossini's work has been absolutely foundational. And what she suggests is that incivility isn't inherently bad for all users, and it isn't inherently bad for democracy itself. It could be that things like swearing, or even to some degree, name-calling of others, actually winds up helping people's voices break through. On the other hand, intolerance does break core democratic norms in the sense that it targets users based on their particular protected characteristics, such as race and gender.
Okay, once you have all of this and you've done all of this research, what might Twitter do with these metrics and these findings?
Yeah, there are a number of things. And one thing that I want to be careful to clarify here, the work that we're doing won't allow Twitter to identify individual tweets on the platform, to flag them or take them down. Instead, what we're providing is a broad assessment, a true measure over a larger conversation on a particular topic of the extent to which these different phenomena appear within that conversation. Now, these broad measures, I think, will ultimately help platforms like Twitter to better understand where and when it's most likely that the unhealthy dynamics might emerge. The sort of information that we'd be providing would allow them to look more closely in potentially problematic spaces as they arise.
Tell me more about what you think that looks like. Like, is Twitter interested in guiding conversations, creating tools that like pop up a little clippy, you know, from Microsoft Office device? Like, I see you might be headed for an incivil conversation.
Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, all of those options are possibilities. And because we're external academic experts on this, we're not actually privy to the sorts of conversations, the sorts of thinking that Twitter has along these lines.
Right.
So unfortunately, I can't tell you too much about what Twitter's thinking in terms of how they might actually then apply these sorts of metrics and, you know, their broader aims here.
Right. I mean, one thing, though, that I can't help but think is that, you know, there's been this controversy. Twitter and Facebook have been criticized so far, really without proof, for suppressing conservative voices on the platform. Are you concerned at all about how your research might be used in that conversation?
There's certainly no doubt that we're stepping into a politically charged environment.
Yeah.
And anytime there's research being released, information being released about the platform's performance, about any new policies that they're implementing, there's a rush to take advantage of that in the political arena. And so we are quite concerned about how our results, which will be political in nature, they will be about political topics. We're definitely concerned about how those will be politicized. But we remain committed to sharing each and every one of our findings publicly, because we think that while some of that criticism we will undoubtedly face will be problematic and unfair, we still want to be able to make sure that those who are viewing our results with an honest and open mind have the opportunity to point out where we might have made mistakes, where we could do things better, but ultimately that everyone can actually learn from our results.
And you know, this is kind of a technical question, but what about bots? Is it harder to measure to accurately measure the health of conversations if, well, like a lot of the people who are participating are not actually people?
I don't think it's actually harder to measure the health of conversations because we're interested in the overall ecosystem. We're interested in what even the bots are putting out there. So for other types of research, it might be more problematic if there's all sorts of noise being introduced by the, you know, inauthentic behavior of bots. But in our case, the bots actually contribute to the overall conversational environment. And we need to understand when the bots themselves are creating part of the problem.
What's the biggest challenge you have ahead of you with this work?
I think that there are two core challenges. One is simply the technical challenge that we've set for ourselves is quite high. Developing the metrics themselves, making sure that they are actually robust, will be hard work. You know, it's complicated to automatically detect and label things like incivility and intolerance. So that, of course, will be a challenge. And the second one is a challenge that you actually touched on already. And that's simply as we try to communicate our findings with the broader public, making sure that we, of course, are being held accountable, but that we're being held accountable fairly, and that the findings that we have don't contribute any more than necessary to an already polarized and what can be toxic political environment.
Rebecca Trombl teaches media and politics at George Washington University. The team will release preliminary findings from their research in 6 to 9 months. And now for some related links. After lo these many years of thinking about possible solutions to the toxic conversation problem, Twitter did finally this week roll out an actual change, at least in the US and Japan. It's called Hide Replies. You can now hide replies on a thread that you started. The replies won't be deleted, and anyone can still view them with an extra click. But it can at least reduce the influence and visibility of the people or bots who are posting unhelpful or abusive or bullying responses. And honestly, this is a very basic step. Although some critics say it could be used to silence reasonable disagreement on public posts. But since it's all still there for the viewing, I think it's an acceptable trade-off. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM. Marketplace Tech helps you stay sharp on all things related to technology and the economy. And to help you do some numbers of your own, you can get your very own Marketplace Pencil Pack when you donate today. It's a set of 6 pencils, each stamped with a different Marketplace quote, yours for just $5 a month. Support public service journalism and get your pencil pack today at marketplace.org. And thanks.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.